Welcome to a brand new episode of The Football Corner, Munch's very own home for all things football. My name is Vikram.
My name is Shreyas.
And if you guys are new or old, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, CastBox, and more.
And don't forget to follow us on all social media. That's at Muncher Podcasts.
Shreyas, pretty exciting episode lined up. We're going to be talking about everything that's happened in the Bundesliga. Thank God football is back. I don't care if it's without fans or not, but I'm just so happy. We're also going to be talking about Project Restart and what the situation is across all of the other European leagues. And then we're going to jump to something that both you and I are pretty excited about, which is we both took some time out and figured out who our best under 23 team from all leagues, all football players across the globe is, and we're going to go head-to-head and figure out who has a better team and who essentially are the best under 23 young kids out there to look forward to. So super excited about that. We'll get to that later on in the episode. Really quickly to start off, we have a couple of updates from what's being labeled now as Project Restart. I don't understand why they have to give it a name, but it's basically about when and how the English football season, the EPL season, is going to start. So essentially where we are at is that they've done two rounds of COVID testing. I think the second round was around 1,700 people got tested and they got 8 positive cases. So we know at least 2 of them are players, I think, if not 3. Essentially, I think tomorrow, which is Thursday, May 28th, is a big day because they'll start the round 3 of COVID testing. So unless these guys see anything, any improvements and, going in the right direction, they're not going to take a call on restarting the league. If the test results are the same or worse off, then that's actually going to hamper the ability for EPL clubs to and the league as a whole to restart. So I hope that doesn't happen. I think from what we know is they're keeping it private, but Hull City had a couple new cases. There's a Bournemouth player who's unnamed player who's in self-isolation. And what's, I think, the raging debate or the raging news is that a lot of these players and some clubs are also very hesitant on restarting, right? So Troy Deeney being one of them and your favorite N'Golo Kante.
Yes.
How's that going?
Not the best situation to be in, I think, both from the players' perspectives, specifically what we're calling BAME players. By that, we mean Black, Asian minorities and other
ethnic groups. Yeah.
Right. So, what that basically means is apparently certain races, quote unquote, African Americans are more susceptible to get the virus. That in itself is a very scary proposition. And what makes it worse, specifically for Kante, is he has a very weird, tricky family history. His brother died of a heart attack sometime around the 2018 World Cup. He himself, I think he collapsed in training while at Chelsea sometime this season. So, and that's so weird. You picture this lung-busting Kante substituted off for Kante's twin brother substituted on, like he just runs nonstop, and then you have this side of it. So I will not be surprised if the guy doesn't feature at all this season. So
it's a legit concern, right? It's something that's actually tangible and he's experienced it. Troy Deeney, for example, he says that his I forget son or daughter, but a young child in his family, they have some respiratory problems, so they're very susceptible if Troy Deeney puts himself at risk and of getting this virus. So these are actually very real concerns. So it's completely understandable that these guys have it. There are a few other coaches and stuff as well who are saying that, that for a multitude of reasons, some saying like, the players won't be at match fitness level, which is actually a concern because that leads to a higher number of injury cases not the right results. And also the risk of just contracting this virus because Europe was hit really, really hard.
Right.
I think we're, according to me, we're yet to see the worst of it in India, so we can't really say from personal experience, but the States and Europe was hit really, really hard, so these guys are scared and understandably so. So these are all real concerns, and I guess it's all speculation until the third round of testing does happen, and all of the clubs have unanimously voted that we can start contact training, but that's yet to be approved by the government. So everything is still up in the air. Proposed date seems like June 12th right now, but there's always flexibility there. And I think what these guys are also discussing is what happens in the possibility of that date getting extended. Are we truncating the season? Are we completely chalking off the season? What happens there? Do we do promotions? Do we do relegations? And how that looks? So all these discussions are ongoing. And up until now, there's nothing concrete to talk about except that we have had these round two of results, and round three starts tomorrow. So tomorrow's going to be a big day for these guys in terms of actually knowing what's going to happen and how it's going to look.
Like you said, I think we were talking about this, off camera or off mic, and you said that I think once we get over the safety, the basic safety aspect of it, it's just going to be bombarded from a financial or a commercial standpoint.
Right.
So, and I think that's what makes this tricky or sad, because when you expect football to resume, especially when it's the Premier League, you think that everyone's going to be unanimous, that all players are going to turn up, and that everyone will be really wanting to get back to football. But then you have these cases with certain players, coaches, managers, whatever it may be, and they may not feature. So, it's like nothing straightforward. I personally think June 12th is way too soon. If they're not even training full contact, in 2 weeks they want to start matches, I just don't see that happening. So maybe June 19th, and that's still optimistic for me, but hopefully definitely in June.
Yeah, I think June 12th is pretty optimistic. Look, according to me, if all of the safety concerns are alleviated, which means that, okay, round three of COVID results ends up with zero positive cases, that's a big factor in terms of, okay, the safety bit. And, you know, they give proposals, they show how they're going to do, like, match day, what the procedure is going to be, how the safety of players is ensured. I think that takes a lot away from the concerns that these players and these managers have. And then beyond that, once it gets to, like, match fitness concerns and all of that concerns, then I think money takes over. Money takes over, and money's like, yeah, listen, safety is not an issue. We're not putting players' health at risk, people's health at risk. Now it's just a matter of, okay, fine, the first two or three rounds of football are going to be super scrappy or whatever. Then it's all down to the money. And I think money's going to just be overpowering that, as long as obviously safety is taken care of. So similar situation in Spain, for example, the government said that you guys can go ahead and start football matches from June 8th onwards. And I think they're looking at June 11th or 12th. But the La Liga president, Javier Tebas, still says that he's hoping that June 11th is going to be the kickoff date. So nothing official there as well. It's only the German league that we see in the one of the top five leagues that's come sort of bursting out of the gate in terms of showing the world how this can be done and how it should be handled. And they've already had two, and in some cases, three round of matches that are finished. So why don't we just jump to that? Actual football to talk about, Shreyas. This has been a long time coming. I'm pretty happy about this, man. So let's just talk about the big one that happened yesterday, Der Klassiker. We saw Dortmund and Bayern play a couple of rounds before this, and we kind of ascertained how they were playing. So going into this, I had high hopes. But in terms of the goal count, kind of a whimper. Great goal by Kimmich, but we didn't see the Haaland that we'd expected. We didn't see the Hakimis and the Sanchos and the Hazards, the Thorgan Hazards, right? So Dortmund seem super subdued compared to their first two matches.
Right. I mean, it's also, I don't know, like even Julian Brandt, like literally I remember the commentators saying that, oh my God, he's had such a brilliant, you know, first two games, and here he's almost like not in there, like he's not present at all. I don't know, they had a good 10 minutes. But besides that, I don't know, it just, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are watching the Bundesliga who may not have either watched it at all before or didn't know about it or only knew about it through European competitions. So, you know, for both old and new, I guess this match just shows Bayern Munich will always be, you know, at the level of a Liverpool or a City, where just consistently, they will grind it out. They're on course to win their eighth Bundesliga in a row. And Dortmund will just try to, you know, try to keep their neck in the race, but somehow they always come second fiddle. So, you know, a lot of their players have ended up being signed, you know, by Munich. And, you know, you can almost tell that are they a feeder club? Are they an Arsenal? But, yeah, not so much with the young crop, not so much with the Haalands and stuff. But I think this was just a statement in maturity, statement in, you know, where they are as clubs. And, yes, Dortmund's on a high. It would have been insane if Dortmund beat PSG, but they've struggled in the Champions League as well. So, yeah, not very great football to see, especially the you know, these yellow guys not performing up to all the hype, these young players. Munich did what they had to do, 7 points clear, and I think they don't have to worry about anything else.
Yeah, so just to recap the table, Bayern and Dortmund both have played 28 rounds now, and Bayern's at 64, Dortmund's at 57. RB Leipzig's going to be playing, I think they're playing as we speak, in fact. And if they win this game, they're going to be level with Dortmund at 57. They still have about 5 to 6 rounds to go, right? So being 7 points back is not the worst thing. But if Bayern can sustain their form at the level they're playing, then yeah, there's nothing that Dortmund and Leipzig can do about this. But some pretty cool stuff that I've been seeing. I remember watching the Dortmund and Wolfsburg game, and Wolfsburg was actually projecting crowd noise during the game. I think that was a good touch. It took my mind a little bit away from, firstly, just the overwhelming feeling you have that there's no one in the stadium. So you just hear like so much of the players' noises and the coaching staff and stuff like that. So the environmental ambient noise that they added to the crowd, I think it took a little bit away from that. It was pretty good to see. I hope that becomes a model that everyone follows, because otherwise, just watching this whole, it's literally like you're watching a game when it's a stadium ban. I remember before the lockdown happened, there was a Juve Inter game where Inter had a stadium ban, and we had to watch it without any fans, and it was weird. It was good to like hear the players and all of that, but it got old after a while. So it's a new normal that we're witnessing now. It's going to be a while till we can see 50,000 people gathering together to watch a match. So I think this is something we'll have to get used to. And I hope clubs sort of identify new ways to do it. Unlike a certain South Korean club, I think they put up sex dolls
They made a mistake. They wanted to go for mannequins, but they ended up with sex dolls.
Right, because obviously they're the same, right? They just look the same. It's just massive marketing for the sex doll company. And obviously these guys are fine. other stuff that we're seeing, except for the last match we saw from Leverkusen, Kai Havertz is on fire, dude.
Yeah, I mean, that guy just seems to, you know, he's just upgraded, I think, overnight with this gap in football. What I understood of him initially was like he's just attacking mid. He can drift a little wide. He can be a false nine, a support striker, but he's definitely in that midfield area. And then we see him playing center forward both games, getting 2 goals in both matches, hit the post as well. So
a bit of a whimper against in the third game. They lost 4-1 to Wolfsburg. But do you think it's like a young man's body versus an older man's body? You see like the first game day, like Werner hat-trick, Haaland scoring, Kai Havertz double, following up with another double. And then like, you don't see the same sort of things with maybe the Lewandowskis or someone. Even though they end up scoring, they get into that group. But straight out of the gate, I think it has a little bit to do with age and condition of body and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like. I mean, we talk about, you know, Haalands and Sanchos and Havertz, and we keep on forgetting that they're freaking kids. They just become adults. They're 18, 19, 20 years old. They're already first team. In fact, I think Havertz has been captaining the side for these games. So, I mean, if everyone's talking about
the thing with Kai Havertz is like, fine, with Haaland, you know, this is his first sort of season in the big leagues. And he had like maybe one season of prominence before this. Kai Havertz has been playing for Leverkusen for 3-4 seasons.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, age is not even a factor. This guy is more experienced than probably 60-70% of his team, right?
Possibly, yes, yes.
So, it's just absurd to see like him and like Mbappe. Mbappe like is like a full-bred professional now. He's played so much football in his life.
He's won a freaking World Cup already. He's just missing the Champions League.
Exactly, dude. So, like, these guys have so much experience under their belt that you can't even count them as kids anymore. They should rightfully be treated as proper adults, professional footballers.
Right, but exactly what you said, that when it comes to like a Lewandowski or a, you know, Joshua Kimmich, that, you know, these guys are, you know, mid-20s, late-20s. Lewandowski is 30-plus now. Hit the freaking post left foot shot yesterday. These guys are thoroughbred, seasoned professionals, and they know what they're doing. So it'll be super interesting to see where Sancho, where Havertz end up going. I don't think so. Haaland will be moving that quickly. He literally transferred like 4 or 5 months ago, and he's already like, you know, first team killing it in Dortmund. So yeah, everyone's talking about how expensive Sancho might be. 100 million, 120. Does that come down to 80? If it's United, they can still afford to pay.
No. They're gonna tank. The prices are gonna tank this transfer season. That's one thing that I'm waiting to hear some concrete news about in terms of when does it start, when does it end, what happens in that weird week. If everyone's starting in September again, then what happens in that weird August month where hopefully some Champions League football is going on and a Timo Werner is already a Liverpool player. So, like, I'm just waiting for some news there, because obviously that's the last thing they're gonna figure out once they have like a proper idea about dates and restarts and endings and stuff like that, is only when they can figure out, okay, fine, let's do a transfer market now. Right. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay, you know what? We've beaten around the bush a lot. We've spoken about young players and how expensive they are. Why don't we just jump to something that we're both looking forward to? Our under 23 teams from the current crop of footballers. So essentially, we're going to be talking about the best young guys out there. And the way we've done it is we've set our teams up. We're only doing a starting 11. We set our teams up in whatever formation we please. Nothing absurd like a 1-1-5-5 or something like that. It's going to be standard formations that you see in everyday football. Right. And we're going to be talking about players that make sense. So it's not a formation first approach. It's a player first approach or formation first approach where it makes sense. So we're not going to be putting, for example, Trent on the right wing or De Ligt as my goalkeeper. Nothing absurd. Wherever a player plays, they play. And our team is essentially being limited by what the best team with the best formation can look and feel like, right? And then we've also chosen a coach, someone who's less experienced and just essentially the under 23 version of the coaches out there, and who we think makes sense. So how we're going to do this is, why don't I go first? I'll talk about my team and my formation, and then we just, you know, go over our thoughts on which players where and why I've picked a certain player over a certain player and stuff. And then Shreyas will do the same. And then you guys can let us know which team is better, which player you think we missed out, or who should be a shoe-in. Yeah. Again, there's a lot, way more than I expected in terms of people I had to leave out. And it's a very, very hard exercise to do, but I had a blast doing it. Okay, so my team. My team is a 4-1-2-3.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, yes. So, or you can call it a 4-3-3 essentially. But my middle midfielder is essentially a defensive midfielder. So I like to see my two players a little up front. It's a 4-3-3. I'm just making shit up. my goalie is Donnarumma. That's a shoe-in, I think. There's no one else who comes close in terms of an under 23 player who could make sense. Oh, sorry, another caveat I forgot to mention. When we came up with this challenge, we thought that under 23 might be a little too limiting. So it's 23 and under, and we can have two players who are also 25 and under if we want to. Okay. So I just want to gloat and say that all my players are under 23 and under. And I don't know what Shreyas it looks like. Okay, getting back to it. Donnarumma is my goalie. My back four is Trent on the right, Alphonso Davies on the left, De Ligt as my right center back, and Upamecano as my left center back. I think that's pretty understandable.
Yes.
My midfield three is something that surprisingly I struggled with the most. I thought I'd struggle with the front line the most, but I didn't. I struggled with the midfield three the most. So as my center defensive midfielder, I picked Rodri.
Oh, interesting.
Very interesting. Firstly, I had no idea the guy's 23, all right? I was researching. I was like, what? This guy's 23? It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Like, you see him and then you see the backing that Guardiola has for him. It's completely, completely makes sense. So I think Rodri here is a shoo-in for me. On my left side of midfield, I have Frenkie de Jong.
Oh,
now, Frenkie de Jong was getting battled with Phil Foden for this position, according to me. But Phil Foden, just the spraying that Frenkie de Jong could do and just getting out of tight situations and helping Rodri out of tight situations, I thought Frenkie's pairing would have been much better than Foden's pairing with Rodri, because Foden, comparing to Frenkie de Jong, has a lower ceiling in terms of the amount of things the guy can do. He's phenomenal, he's fantastic, but having Rodri and having Phil Foden, there was a lot of replication in terms of, or duplication in terms of skill sets. So I thought Frenkie and Rodri pairing would have been great for my sort of central midfield. My other right-sided midfield is, well, we've spoken so much about him already. It's Kai Havertz. It's a no-brainer to have such an attacking threat in your midfield. And having Frenkie and Rodri sort of take care of it and make sure the defense doesn't collapse, especially Rodri and Frenkie helping him out, I thought having someone of an attacking ilk in the midfield would make a lot of sense. So I went Frenkie de Jong over Phil Foden. That was my top two there. A close third for that position was going to be Rodrigo Bentancur from Juve. That guy's phenomenal, dude. I know you don't watch that much Italian football, but I can't tell you how good this guy is. He's only 22. He's so stable. He is so stable that I just wait and watch him getting snapped up by a Barca, Real, or a Man City in the next season or two. He's unbelievable in terms of how he plays. And just the stability he gets to that midfield, I'm super calm when he's on the ball. Whenever we're in a tight situation, as soon as Bentancur gets the ball, I was like, bach gaya. Ab mere ko tension leni zarurat hai. Okay, so it's like that. That's how good he is. Okay, so that's my midfield three, Frenkie de Jong, Rodri, and Kai Havertz. Yeah. My front three, well, obviously, there's one shoe-in here. There are many shoe-ins here, but Kylian Mbappe. I mean, everyone's going to have Kylian Mbappe in their team for best under-23 player. Now, the curious thing is that because this guy can literally play anywhere, I use that to my advantage because I didn't want to get limited to his center-forward or left-wing preferred spot. I put him on the right. That's why he played for France in the World Cup. Yeah. I think he did a great job. So I put him on the right. And I put him on the right so that I could have Marcus Rashford on the left.
You put Marcus Rashford,
the Manchester United player. Yeah, the same. I picked Rashford, dude. I picked Rashford, and I'll tell you a few close ones in terms of the wings that came. I think the closest, according to me, that came was, I don't know if you know him, he's an Italian player. His name is Federico Chiesa, 22 years old.
I know Chiesa.
Fantastic player, fantastic, fantastic player, but just Mbappe and Rashford being there, I couldn't say no. Dude, I think Rashford is a phenomenal winger. I know he doesn't want to label himself or whatever. He's like, I'll play whatever the hell I want. As a left winger, just attacking that box from the left, he is lethal. And given free reign, he can just do, and on his best, he can do whatever he wants. So these are my two wingers. And surprise, surprise, my striker is a certain Erling Braut Haaland. So that's my front three. That's Rashford, Haaland, and Mbappe. Quick question. Are we calling him Haaland? Are we calling him... I like to call him Erling sometimes. This is just a fun thing.
What about Braut?
No, so the thing with Braut is I also have another name for him, which is... Like, picture a 1950s a detective novel author, E.B. Haaland.
Sure.
Okay, so I'm going to call him E.B. Haaland. So I have Rashford, E.B. Haaland, and Mbappe as my three. So just to recap, there's Gigi Donnarumma, Alphonso Davies, Upamecano, De Ligt, Trent as my backline, Frenkie de Jong, Rodri, and Kai Havertz in my midfield, and Rashford, Haaland, and Mbappe in my front three. And as my coach, I have, obviously, Julian Nagelsmann.
Right. Interesting. Do you know what your average age looks like?
Dude, Rodri is the oldest guy. He's 23. Otherwise, it's 21, 21, 20, 19, 21, 20, 22, 21, 19. It's probably going to be like 20 or 21.
Okay. And in fact, Rodri's birthday is in less than a month. So if we did this a month later,
Rodri... It's fine. He'll be my above. He'll be my 25 and below player. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Was this what you were doing when I was telling you my team? Were you checking everyone's birthday?
Pretty much, yes.
What a guy. Okay. any thoughts, anything, any surprise, any whatever? Any thoughts, or do you want to just jump to your team?
No, surprises, 100%. I mean, Rashford, I'm not going to deny, I kind of like him, especially with the current season, the season that we've played so far. The guy was playing with painkillers and playing through pain like insane. So, in terms of commitment, 100%, yes. But I think you're spoiled for choice in those positions, and Rashford would not have necessarily made my first team. So Rashford is a surprise. I don't know too much about Chiesa. I've heard about him. I've played a bunch with him on FIFA and stuff. But don't know too much about him. But I trust your judgment when it comes to...
He's not my team. He's a close
second. Yeah, but just the players you're considering. And finally, Rodri. I mean, I see the potential, but... And another fun fact is that Rodri is the most expensive signing by City, which, I mean, so people would think it was the KDBs or Kyle Walker. They were all 50+. And
so the thing is that Rodri came in the season where post Neymar and Mbappe and stuff, right? So like prices automatically got jacked up like 20-20%. If Rodri would have come like when KDB and Kyle Walker came, he would have been like 40.
Right. So, I mean, just the season he's had, it's not been the strongest, and they wanted him to replace Fernandinho. Fernandinho is playing centre-back. So he hasn't had the best season. He's an outlier, I think, in terms of his character. I haven't seen him play football too much with Atletico Madrid, but I know that when Guardiola says that he is his perfect player, he doesn't worry about expensive watches or fancy haircuts or tattoos. He just worries about the football that he's playing. That's some serious praise. And then obviously City backed him up by paying that kind of money for him. I'd love to see him blossom. We don't know what's up with City, and we can do our fantasy Premier League and our fantasy under 23s all we want, but I don't see very green pastures for Rodri, so I'm surprised.
Seriously?
Yes.
That's a lot of hate for Rodri. It's completely undeserved.
It's not hate. I'm just saying he's stuck in a situation where
he's first team, the second best team in the EPL.
Absolutely, but we don't know with the transfer ban, with the UEFA potential ban, with whether Guardiola stays or not.
That leaves Aguero, that leaves a KDB, that leaves all of these guys, Sterling in a flux as well. So I don't see that. And I think he's actually had a decent season. He's not been that bad. He's actually come in and. How I judge a good season is, for example, someone comes in and takes up a position which has been managed by someone who's been there for like as long as Fernandinho has, and does it without any hiccups. Fine, right. he's not overly having a positive effect on the game. But as long as you're not complaining about the CDM position, that means the guy's doing a great job, right?
Right, but I think that's just a credit to. You know, the kind of role and the kind of job that Fernandinho did. And I think it's actually unfair when you try to replace positions like for like in terms of what the previous player brought to it. For example, at Chelsea, everyone's saying who's going to be the next Hazard. That's not the point. It should be who should be the next left winger or right winger or center.
Agreed, obviously. And no, if you look at it, then Fernandinho and Rodri have very different games when it comes to the CDM position. Rodri provides a lot of different things that Fernandinho didn't, and vice versa. But the point being that he's come in and he's made that position his own, where you don't feel the need of putting Fernandinho in center defensive midfield. Aside from the problems they're having at center back, assume that all their center back stuff was fine. You still won't feel the need of Fernandinho being a CDM. Fine, you put him in for like minutes and stuff like that. But just the fact that that's not happened means that Rodri's made that position himself or his own. And to do that and run a team like City from the back, I think that's a pretty good job. Regardless, I mean, I think we've stuck on Rodri a little too much. So Rashford and Rodri are the two surprises from my team. Why don't we jump into your team? What you got?
So should I go, player for player, or should I just say which ones are different? No, but
I was giving you a 4-3-3 as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a 4-3-3. I like how you said that, you know, you have one defensive midfielder, so it automatically becomes a 4-1-2-3. But no, I've taken cues from Conte and what I know.
Or three at the back.
No, not the three at the back, but the double pivot that Conte did with Matic and Kante. So I have a 4-2-1-3. So,
okay.
Yeah. Keeper, yeah, absolutely the same. I hope the guy comes to the Premier League, if not Chelsea. But no, but I think he's almost reached, in a weird way, he's reached a ceiling at Milan, and Milan are going through a lot of transition, and he's insanely young to kind of have the experience he has, and I think one of the bigger, better teams or leagues are just aching for someone like him. So I really want him to step outside of Italy. Yeah, again, no brainer. The players that I have,
what's your back four? Just shoot.
Yeah, the ones that are same are Dilit, Upamecano, and Davies. I mean, not a lot of people didn't know what was up with Davies. For Chelsea fans, it was even worse because that first leg that we lost at the Bridge, Davies just destroyed Chelsea.
Davies is on a roll. He's on a season of his life. COVID-19 ban notwithstanding, he's a killer player. Bright future ahead of him. I'm baffled right now. Did you just say that you don't have Trent Alexander-Arnold as your right back?
I do not have Trent Alexander-Arnold as my right back because I have a certain Moroccan on loan from Real Madrid at Dortmund, Achraf Hakimi. The way this guy connects with Sancho on that right-hand side is just magic. And I know that Madrid are desperate to get him back. I know that Dortmund are desperate to sign him permanent. So, yeah, we don't know what the transfer season looks like, but this guy is lighting fires no one else has ever seen, and he's already wearing a yellow jersey. So as much as I like Trent, as much as we said that Trent can't be right wing, well, he crosses so freaking well, I think he can play right wing. But just to couple the defensive capabilities, the way he connects with Sancho on the right side, it has to be Hakimi. No-brainer for me.
Wow, I thought Trent would have been a shoe-in. I know Hakimi is great, but I mean, no. Ben's Trent, dude.
No, man. Hakimi is just like, this just came out of nowhere. And like I said, it helps that I've seen him because all the eyes are on Sancho's, the Haalands and stuff. And
no, he's great. He's great. And we can see, like, even post-restart, he's had a great two games and not a great classical, but he had a great two games as well. I think according to me, he was a player of the match in the first game. Just played so well, all over the place. You wouldn't think that he's a right back. He's like up there, but he's still defending and stuff. So great player for sure.
Right.
Okay, cool.
In my double pivot, I have Frankie De Jong. We said enough about him. That guy coming out of tight spaces, turning, flipping the game, just keeping the ball moving from defense to attack. I don't think anyone comes close to this guy. He is just that sort of position remastered, re-engineered, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Only 22 years old, absolutely killing it at Barcelona. Sergio Busquets, who? So, this guy is just made for big stuff, and I can't wait to see what he does with the national team as well. On the other side of the pivot to help him out, not only from a technical aspect, but also just pure athleticism, going up and down, something like a box-to-box would be Youri Tielemans from Leicester.
Right. Add him on my list as well. What this leaves your team susceptible to is you don't have defensive cover for your backline. Because Frankie's not the greatest, like, he's not strong, right? So he's not the greatest defender. And Tielemans, he's built for it, but he's forward so much more than he needs to be.
Right.
That's one of the bigger reasons I ended up putting Rodri there, for example. I needed some backline cover, right?
Right.
So I think that, but still, great pick, man. Tielemans also 22, fantastic season he's having. I think he was a great buy.
Yeah, I mean, I've been keeping tabs on him since he was at Monaco because I'm just automatically with Chelsea and Hazard, Hazard being captain of the Belgium team. I was just starting to look at, you know, the Belgium national team and how many players in the Premier League, how many players are in the other top five leagues. And I was like, okay, there's this, you know, guy in Monaco just killed it one of those seasons and made it to the semifinals of the Champions League. And the next season or over the two seasons, they lost a lot of players. One of them was Tielemans. And just the way the guy's adapted in the Premier League, the kind of stuff that he's done for Leicester, I've seen him play for the national team as well. And yeah, it's just a fun combination of quickly moving the ball. If running required, great. There's just so much of technicality going on there. So yeah, just as soon as I put Frankie with without thinking, I'm like, I need to pair him with someone who we can just like quick passing with. So Tielemans made sense.
Okay. So and, you have Frankie and Tielemans as your two, and then I'm assuming then, Kai Havertz as your one in front of them.
There you go. Yeah, that's easy.
And then we can move. And can I guess the rest of your front three? Because I know two of the three.
Namely?
Mbappe.
Right. That's an old one.
And Haaland? You have Haaland in there.
No, I don't.
Do you have Lautaro Martinez in there?
Yes.
Oh my god. Okay.
And I have Hakimi because I have Sancho.
And Sancho. Okay, so you play Mbappe on the left and Martinez in the center and Sancho on the right.
Correct. I mean, okay. Yeah, I mean, Martinez reminds me of a young Sergio Aguero in Atletico Madrid.
He's great, dude.
Yeah, he's a short guy, super fast. He's super composed. He's strong.
And accurate. I think that's the biggest thing about him. He's so accurate in the box. Like he won't be wasteful in terms of chances and stuff. Very efficient on the ball. So there's completely understandable that Barcelona's after him so much. He's great.
Yeah. I mean the world will notice when Messi says, yeah, I want this guy or whatever. So in fact there have been rumors that that Barcelona are gonna take Pjanic from Juve and then give him to Inter for Martinez. There's stuff like that doing the round. So yeah, they're really desperate to get him, and he also has a huge price tag. So I don't know how that's gonna work out, but this is what I ended up with. And
okay, so just to recap your team, you have Donnarumma in goal. Yeah. Davies, Alfonso Davies is your left back. Upamecano and De Ligt as your center backs, and Hakimi as your right back.
Yeah.
And Frankie De Jong and Yuri Tielemans in your center midfield, and Kai Havertz playing sort of a cam role.
Yes.
And then Mbappe on the left wing. Martinez is your center forward, and Sancho is your right wing. That's a pretty solid team, dude.
I mean, it's attack focused. I want to keep the ball moving. I want like Havertz has. I think Havertz is possibly the tallest, leaving the defense and the goalkeeper. I think Havertz is tall, so I'm looking at him to like enter the box, put some headers in if he has to. I have speed, like insane speed. The right side has Hakimi and Sancho. I have Davies and Mbappe. That's just scary. And then Martinez is to finish it off. So yeah, so it's extremely attack focused. Maybe without the ball, I probably haven't thought of that too much, which is why my coach is Frank Lampard, because Frank Lampard sucks at defense. What I've written in my coaching is Frank Lampard plus a defensive coach.
I think just because think about how the team is set up. You have your back line, which is solid, and then you have Frankie and Tielemans, arguably not the most defensively.
Yes.
Defensive. They're not gonna. Yeah, gifted. Let's say gifted there. Right. And then instead of more sort of manpower, you only have sort of Havertz in that pocket.
Right.
So it's not like, your front line or there are people ahead of them which can, like, there are more attacking midfielders that can sort of cover up. Right. So that hole, I think, is going to be super problematic. Other than that, I mean, if you guys are countering and just, like, relying on speed and stuff, then, yeah, I can totally see it working. But someone like, for example, you play a Jose Mourinho team, you're never going to win.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. No, but this took hours. I thought it'd be super simple. Multiple pages.
That's so much fun, though. I had so much fun.
Right. And I actually picked up a few players in my initial draft, and they were 25 years old, which was Laporte. I wanted him at center back. And I had Fernandes instead of Havertz. And then looking at the Bundesliga restart, it just reaffirmed how mature Havertz is and the kind of stuff that he brings to the plate. So I'm just
sorry. Who did you have in place of Havertz?
Fernandes, Bruno Fernandes, who made Team of the Year playing 5 games.
He's a great player, though. Great player.
Yeah, I mean,
his footballing life didn't start at United, right? He was playing good football before that as well.
Of course, I mean, Ronaldo gave his thumbs up to Fernandes because obviously he knows him from the national team, but he's followed the same trajectory of Sporting Lisbon to United. And in fact, pre-season last year, 2019, I think there was a Sporting Liverpool match, and I think it was a 2-2 draw, or Sporting 1-2, and Fernandes scored both goals.
Yeah.
And there were rumors that Klopp was after Fernandes, but he didn't have space for him in his midfield, and probably didn't end up, you know, putting the money in, and United swooped 6 months later. So, yeah, I mean, much.
Well, barring that, United have been trying for like a year and a half before that. I think it's. I mean, yeah, great player, dude. Both of them, even Laporte, injury barring, fantastic defender. I was actually expecting you to go three at the back, so I was kind of curious to see what that would look like. But yeah, pretty solid team overall, man. I think this was a fun exercise. We should do this more. We should just put some more limiters there and try to create a team out of that. So
yeah, I mean, I remember talking to you off the mic, and we should do like under 25 or whatever age, but we should do worst players, and then we should argue why one player's or one team is worse than the other. And you can't just say because I have Bakayoko, but you have to say why Bakayoko is worse. So I think that's going to put a different taste and different twist to this.
Yeah, I think it's just a good exercise in enhancing our research capabilities if we do that. Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
It's like finding stats and numbers to back why this player sucks as opposed to as a great player. Anyway, that wraps up this episode of TSC. Let us know what you guys thought of our under 23 teams, and if you guys thought we should have added a few more players, or which team do you think would win. And we'll come back at you next week with another roundup of Bundesliga matches, because that's the only football we have to watch right now. I'm not complaining. And also of updates from the world of football in terms of any concrete news that's come out, and when we're looking for a restart to happen. Till then, catch you guys later. Bye-bye.
And don't forget to follow us on all social media at Muncha Podcasts.